Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Rob Fisher here with Fools International. I got President Richie Stack on the line with me. Richie, there?
Yes, I am.
Good evening, brother. How are you doing this evening?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's been a crazy week for Fools with some losses. I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit later, but trying to get used to this board. We're trying to work things out, and you know, in typical firefighter fashion, we're like on the 30-second mark trying to work things out, and it seems to work itself out. And but we'll get this thing dialed in one day, I'm sure. Flegel, you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Good.
Hello.
Hello.
All right.
Alaska is
in. What's
up, Ben? How you doing, boss?
What's going on, brother? How are you?
I'm doing good. It's snowing, so I think my family's kind of irritated.
Are you serious? It's snowing today?
Yeah, it decided to snow. We're supposed to get 3 inches.
Oh.
Wow.
So much for the planting season.
Not cool.
Well, you know, our last show was at FDIC. It was on April 22nd, Monday, April 22nd. We had a pretty decent show. We were basically talking about what it takes to get us all excited, energized, you know, what recharges our batteries. Had a couple brothers, one from the West Coast and one from the East Coast, Florida area on the show. We had a Swedish firefighter on the show, and we even had Chris Brennan drop into the show and participate. And then, but tonight's show, we're doing part two of our company officer leadership discussion that the three of us had. Oh, I think it was back in January. It was episode 449, and it was probably the most attended listen show that we as Fools have had. Ben and I were talking last night, getting ready for tonight's show, and I told him that, yeah, I think we had like 150 people on the show. Well, I was wrong. We had 456 people listening that that day, which was impressive for us. So, but we're gonna take this to part two, and that's what we're gonna be talking about tonight. But probably before we get going, Richie, you wanna get into some Fools news?
Yeah, why don't we? Real quick. One is, as Robbie kind of alluded to, is that unfortunately we had some losses in our Fools family this week. I'll talk on one of them, and I'll let Robbie talk about the other. Well, we lost Lieutenant Bill Manning in a motorcycle accident down in Florida. So his lieutenant in Kissimmee Fire Department, he was on a motorcycle, and he was struck and killed by a motorist. Bill's been involved with fire service for over 20 years. He left behind his wife, Carrie, and his family members. So just keep his family in our thoughts and prayers. And Robbie, you want to talk about the loss of you guys?
Yeah, we from my chapter, we had Al Nejma. And Al's been a member of Puget Sound Fools for a number of years. He came into the fire service later in life. I think he was 48 or 49 years old when he came in. He's a 12-year veteran with Tacoma Fire Department. Al's a special guy. He's kind of one of those guys that, you know, he's in Tacoma. He's liked by every single person in Tacoma Fire Department. And he is a true brother. Al is known for being a musician at our convention we had in 2008. He and Tom Hayline, who was battalion chief in Tacoma, sang a song that Al wrote for Tom called 40 Years, because Chief Hayline had been working with Tacoma Fire since 1965, and Tom just recently retired last year in 2012. And but Al sang a song, and so he was just a great musician, kind of folk singer, and he had been working on a song that he was writing for the Fools called "I Got Your Back, Brother." And you know, Al's going to be just a loss to our area, and to the R chapter and to Tacoma Fire Department. I know everybody is missing him. On a note with that, Al's family's back in New Jersey, and so just yesterday, Tacoma Fire, his company, took him from the medical examiner's office to the funeral home, preparing him for his flight back to New Jersey. And New Jersey City Pipes and Drums and their honor guide over there are going to take care of everything for Al and his family, and give him his firefighter honors. Al died in the line of duty. He was working that day, and the way I hear it, he was on a medical call. I believe it was a CPR in progress call when he had went unconscious himself and was worked on by his crew. So Al's going to be missed by everybody here.
Okay. Sorry to hear that for our brothers and their families, are in our thoughts and prayers, as well as their local Fools chapter. So I just like to throw that out there. Before we go too much further, just a reminder for everyone out there, the Fools Convention is coming up in September of this year in St. Louis, Missouri. The Muddy River Fools will be is graciously going to be our host this year, and we'd like to see all the chapters there. It's going to be September 17th through the 20th, hosted by the Muddy River Fools. Going to be at the Sheridan and Westport Plaza, St. Louis, and it should be a really good time. Go to the Fools International website and go to their homepage, and up on the top left side there's a link right there for 2013 convention, itinerary, lodging, registration, everything. So come on out. Hope to see you there. If you're a local chapter and you've never been to a Fools convention, you really should go. It will change your life and your experience. And ironically, that's how I know both these two gentlemen sitting on the computer with me tonight. I met Ben Flegel through the Fools organization, and same with Robbie Fisher. And before I made a convention, I would not have known them. I didn't meet them in Chicago. I think I met them, might have been Jersey or somewhere else, or somewhere along the lines. Maybe it was Chicago. I can't remember. But at them, we've been friends since, and that's how this organization works. And that's just a small, small scotch of how this organization works. It's much more deeply embedded than that. So hope to see you there, and throw it on your calendar. Robbie, Ben, go ahead.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Rich. You know, as you were just saying that, it struck me that one of the first times that I ever really felt my heart thump at reading about a line of duty death was the Sun Way fire in Chicago, and I realized that you know, you could very well be in that fire, and you know, that's what the Fools have done for me, is instead of just having a very small tight-knit group of folks in this small town, there's or within our state, I know guys all across the country, and It certainly has changed my worldview of the fire service.
I agree 100%. It's funny you say that, because that was one of my, might have been one of my first talk shows I did on here, was the fire or the collapse at 75th Street at the Songway Laundromat, 75th Street collapse. So yeah, you're right. And it's funny how many phone calls that I got from people wanting to make sure I was okay, because they weren't sure if I was working out, and or in general just the department. And yeah, you're right. It's funny how this small club that those guys, the founder, started in 1995 has transformed, or has been growing passionately, and this is where we're at now. So yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think of our experience last month in FDIC, and that's kind of how I came about the Fools was FDIC West in Sacramento, and I talked a little bit about it on our last show in April at FDIC. But you know, every time I go to these conferences, and even now, more so now, we start running into more people that are, you know, a part of the Fools, and the organization's getting bigger. We're starting to see more networking, and for me, that's been the great thing, you know, meeting people like Ben and Richie. It's just being able to network across the nation, that we all have the same passion for the love of the job, and it's been great. It's been really, really great. So, well, you know, since we're talking a little bit about FDIC, I mean, we can touch on a few things. You know, I got there on you know, Monday morning, and we had a show to do, and it was the show went really well, I think. And next day, did a little bit of Fool's business, ran into Ben, and that was good. And the conference in general, FDIC puts on, you know, Penwell and Fire Engineering put on an awesome conference. We had great lectures, and probably one of the lectures, you know, the morning sessions were great with our keynote speakers, Castros, and I can't remember the chief from Oklahoma, but one of my favorite classes was the NIST studies that they were doing with FDNY, and if you haven't seen that, just type it up on YouTube. They've got the lecture there; you can watch it. It's almost 2 hours long, but the education was great. And then we had our Brotherhood Bash on Wednesday, which was awesome, well attended.
Cool. Very cool. Since you're just talking about FDIC, we'll just mention out there that we had a real good turning, real good showing, and once again, thank you for the Indy Metro Fools for being there for us and for their generosity. We also gave a Lifetime Fools Achievement Award to Bob Halton that night, which was awesome. He was well received by the crowd, which he always is, by his fellow firefighters, and I believe a good time was had by all. So the next time that we can break bread together and drink wine will be in September, so hope to see you there. We're going to talk tonight. Like I said, Ben's really run the show here. It's his leadership thing, principles that he's talking about. And Robbie, I'm just a sidekick here along for the night. But please call in. Don't hesitate to call in. And I got to do it because I do it every time. Dad, if you're out there listening, thanks for listening to my hero, my role model, my mentor. That's it. Moving on to you guys.
All right. Well, hey, Ben, let's... Ben, put your mic on pause or on mute real quick. I'm just curious if you're the feedback.
Okay.
Oh.
Yep.
So much better.
But he's supposed to talk, so we'll have to figure this out.
I know. We'll have to figure this thing out. For some reason, he's echoing back. But
you got a headset?
Let me get it. Yeah, I got a headset on. Let me get some other electronics shut off here and see what it is.
Okay, well, while we're doing that, I'm gonna pull up one of our commercials real quick, and like always, we appreciate the fact Bobby Halton, Fire Engineering, Penwell supporting us and allowing us to have our show, and we do have. I'm looking for them here. Do you see them? Richie,
who's that?
There's so many clips on here now.
No, I don't see them. Where at? The audio clips?
Yeah. What is Ben doing?
I don't know. Mute him.
I am going to mute him. Ben, are you there now? All right, we're going to
mute
him.
Only if I unmute myself.
All right. Well, I'm going to do a commercial real quick. Hang on one second.
With an industry-leading distribution network, Grainger can save you tons of downtime by offering over 900,000 products, many ready to ship right when you need them. In fact, 99% of items ordered ship same day. So fast, the International Acronym Committee is considering changing ASAP to ASAG, or as soon as Grainger. At least they would be considering it if there were such a committee. To help keep your business running efficiently, call quickgrainger.com or stop by a branch today. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, well, let's just real quickly review where we were in January. And, you know, I've got a list. We were talking about the principles of leadership, and I've got them here. Ben, do you want to kind of go through and just touch on each one of them and get us up to speed so we can get into the traits and elements?
Yeah, I can do that. Is the feedback better now?
It's still a little bit there, but it's much better.
Okay, well, I'm sitting in the dark with everything is turned off in the house except for my computer, so maybe it's my pacemaker. I don't know. the principles of leadership, we were talking about the principles that the Marine Corps uses and that many people are familiar with. Most of the services use them in some way, shape, or form. And it's very easy to adopt them to fire service use. They fit right in, and they fit with the action-oriented leadership we need, and they also fit well with the everyday, day-to-day firehouse routine leadership we need as well. So I'll run through them real quick. The first one was know yourself and seek self-improvement, which is evaluating your strengths and weaknesses and getting a clear picture of yourself so that you can see where you're falling down, where you're succeeding, and where you need to make some adjustments. Being technically and tactically proficient. In other words, knowing your job. We all know officers who are right on top of the latest information. They're very good at what their department prefers. They know what their crew can do, and they help their crew see the big picture. And we also know officers who prefer to drive the plush seat in the day room, and tactically they're not interested. So it's obvious which one is the more effective for your crew and for your department. There's develop a sense of responsibility in your subordinates. That's leadership principle number 3. And this one is specifically about the opposite of micromanagement, but allowing your people to take on responsibility, giving them the room to make mistakes. It doesn't mean you don't keep an eye on them and help them get through the tough parts, but you give them the room to make errors, because it's a very effective way to learn. We want to assign tasks and delegate as often as we can, and it enhances. You and I were talking about this last night, how it enables us to move forward ourselves when we share our load through the crew, and they in turn build us up. Number 4 is making sound and timely decisions. Nothing is more frustrating than standing there waiting for the leader to make up his or her mind about what they're going to do. Not only in crisis situations, but just in daily routine around the firehouse. In fact, I think sometimes it's almost worse for morale when it is the mundane tasks. When you've been over a particular issue so many times and the leader still struggles to make a decision. Nothing is admired in the thick of action as well as an officer who makes quick decisions based on educated information and experience that result in a success. So a very important principle. Number five is setting the example where you not only talk the talk, but you walk it as well. This is one of the big struggles that everybody knows that it has to do with your appearance, your attitude, your physical fitness, the example you set day in and day out. You know, one of my big broken legs that I drag around with me is always I have a quick temper, and it gets me into trouble. And I can be doing a really good job of communicating with my crew and showing them the way things need to be done and being patient with them, and I can destroy it all in seconds by losing my temper. And I've had to learn over the years to control that, because it is the complete opposite of the mode I want them to operate in. And they know that as well as I do. They're not fools. Pun. Physical fitness is another important one. You and I both have recently lost some weight and are feeling much better for it. But also, in the back of your mind is the knowledge that you can turn to your crew and talk about physical fitness without having to hide under the table because, you get too big a belly. And we did our pack test yesterday for the red card, wildland red card, and I was able to get the best time I've ever gotten on that test. And it felt really good, and the crew knew I was giving it everything I had.
How much did you lose, bro?
I've lost 27 pounds altogether.
Wow. So I only get to see you like twice a year, so it's hard to tell that you've lost that weight. Plus, I'm a guy. We never see that stuff.
Well, yeah.
I'm calling BS. I think he noticed every time.
I think the last time we were talking about... Go ahead.
I was going to say I didn't want to take it there, but the press can do what he wants.
I was just going to say the last time we were
special. Nobody's special, just another brother.
I was just going to say the last time we were talking about this, I think Richie was calling in while he was at the firehouse, and he's like, hey, I know we just talked about losing weight and you know, eating right. Well, it's time for dinner, and I'm going to have to let you guys go. And it looks like
you are right. That's exactly what happened. It was. And I ate like an ignorant pig. It was awesome.
All right, I'll let you keep on going on with your list there. I just wanted to interject that.
Okay, well, we're about halfway through the principles. I'm eager to get on to the next bit of information, but just touching one more thing on setting the example is how incredibly important it is that you set those standards high, not only for yourself, but for the people that you're trying to lead. And you can't set their standard high if you don't meet it yourself. And so this is all about the traits of leadership, the integrity it takes to be the leader that you want to be. And so that's a big one. Number six is knowing your company members and looking out for their welfare. We could talk one whole show just simply about that leadership principle right there. How many officers have you known that really didn't know their people? They may have spent years with those guys, but that doesn't mean that they've invested themselves in their people, so that some of their leadership decisions are based more on their perception of what is needed versus an informed approach. You know, there should be a time that after you've developed the skill of paying attention to your people and kind of monitoring their morale and their attitude, you should be able to stick your finger in the water and see whether it's hot, lukewarm, or cold. You should know when your people are angry. You should know when they're struggling with something. And that, you know, quite often, they're not going to tell you. You have to sniff it out a little bit. And often they don't know that it's okay for them to bring an issue to you. And I've seen things smoothed out very rapidly by an officer simply taking the time to say, hey, what's eating at you? And it can completely change the whole dynamic on the crew and get get everybody focused back on the job when one particular member is struggling, or the whole crew is upset about, you know, the latest SOP that came down or whatever's going on with the other shifts been doing. So paying attention to your people and learning their signs and signals and their poker face, so to speak. But also looking out for their welfare, being on top of the things, not only that are currently affecting them, but things that you see coming down the path that you can maybe head off to keep their morale where it needs to be. You know, we experience those moments where a policy is coming out, or you hear the boss talking about something he's been thinking about doing, and you think to yourself, "Ah, that's not going to go over too well with the guys," or that's, you know, on top of all the change they've dealt with already, that's not going to be easy to take. And you become their advocate at that point. Company officers are stuck between representing management and being a part of the crew, as we all know. And walking that line is never easy, because, you know, if you're a yes man to the crew, well, then you're not doing your function as an officer. And if you're always a yes man to the chief, then you're not serving your crew. And learning your people is a part of walking that line. Number 7 is keeping your firefighters informed, which goes along with taking care of their welfare and getting to know them. You want to give them enough information to make sure that they're knowledgeable about the situation they're going into, or that they're having to deal with. But specifically, you want to give them that information so that if you're not around, they know what needs to be done and can carry on without your personal supervision watching over them. That's the key there, and that's where the micromanagement mentality struggles. I want to give my people the information that they need to make a decision so they can achieve the goal whether I'm there or not. I don't want to keep them in the dark and tell them your job is to just shut your mouth and do work. That's the old style. That's the old way. And that's certainly the way I was brought into the world of hardworking men. You know, you just shut your mouth, get your job done, kid. Half the time you don't know what's going on around you. So you make mistakes because you don't know to do the right thing because you can't see where the end goal is. By keeping our people informed, we can get to the goal as a team. And even if the leader is taken out or is sidelined, maybe, you know, in a realistic fire ground sense, maybe the leader is reassigned as a safety officer or as a division officer or group officer, and he doesn't have time to watch his particular crew carry out the assignment they originally started with. And if you've spent your time wisely with them ahead of time, they know what the goals are, they know what the plan is, and they carry it out. Number 8 is seeking responsibility and taking responsibility for your actions. So you want to stick by your convictions and be willing to accept the criticism that's going to come with it. You seek to assume responsibility because it's going to help you grow and become a better leader. But also, as you do that, you're going to have to make the decisions that are going to cause mistakes or bring situations about where your convictions are in contrast with your peers or with your supervisors or sometimes the people that you're trying to lead. And sticking by your convictions, being willing to justify your actions in a knowledgeable and then in a manner that keeps the shoe leather out of your mouth is not an easy task. There's a lot of things that can be done to improve on that, but a lot of guys just aren't aware that they need to do it. I have eaten a lot of shoe leather myself over the past 22 years, and I excel at it. And I was even told one time by a chief that he would be patient while I learned to get the shoe out of my mouth. So that is one of my sticking points that I continue to work on. Number 9, we got 3 left of the principles. You still with me, Rob?
I'm right here, brother.
Okay. number nine is ensuring that the task is understood, supervised, and accomplished. That one's pretty self-explanatory, but we struggle with that one, don't we? We really, yeah, I find it a shock sometimes after I've spoken in English as clearly as I possibly can, how confused the message comes out. And it could be because of your radio voice. It could be because you mumble. It could be that you don't explain things in a clear manner. And learning that about ourselves, learning how we personally communicate is important, so you can work on improving it. I have learned, especially in the fireground environment, that my voice does not carry well over the radio. So I have to really concentrate on how I speak. And I also, when talking to my crew, I have disciplined myself to turn to them and speak directly to them. If, you know, sometimes I even grab them and pull them close and speak right into their ear, because, you know, the habit is to talk and move your head at the same time, and they may not even have heard what you said, but because you may be the kind of leader that they're in awe of, or that they just have been trained to stay quiet, they may not object, or they may not clarify, they may not ask the clarifying questions that enable you to see whether or not they understood the message. So,
hey, Ben.
Learning, yeah.
I was just going to say, you know, in with this, you know, I'm thinking typically we're, you know, most are thinking this is a fireground issue, and it can be, you know, it can be, like you were saying, how you communicate something, if you're easily heard, how clear you are with your direction. It could be just as easy as if it's a new guy on your crew, and, you know, a car fire can overwhelm them, and you might tell them something simple to do, and that they're so overwhelmed, it's your job as the supervisor to be able to see that didn't get in the ear and go into the brain, and they didn't process it right, and that you act upon it. But I also think that this principle is just as much as important in the firehouse when we're talking about everything that we're communicating in the station. You know, personally, I think I do pretty good on the fireground communicating, and a lot of it is handled by our tool and job assignments and our predetermined assignments that we work on Ladder 72, so a lot of those things are already worked out. But where I see that I struggle is just the everyday communications in the firehouse, getting things going. And, you know, it's like my driver, Chad, you know, I'll say, yeah, we're going to leave in 10 minutes. And have a project to go do, and he'll be sitting in the truck, you know, knowing that we're really leaving in 20 minutes, and you know, and he always gives me that look, like, I thought you said 10 minutes ago, and I said, you know me, man, you know I'm not going to be able to leave on time, or yeah, there's times that I give two different answers to something, and you know, you kind of get that dog cocked head look, like, what the hell are you talking about? You just said two different things, and I have to, you know, I have to back up. And so, you know, I'm just, it's not just about the fireground and the point that it can be, you know, a young new guy that's overwhelmed by something small that you got to be able to see that they didn't get the information. And then the other thing, it's about working in the firehouse and our everyday functions too.
I think the majority of it is working in the firehouse. You know, so much of the frustrations you have as an officer are because you gave an order, you gave a directive, and it was either received as a suggestion, a hint, maybe if you'd like to, if you feel like doing this, it'd be a good idea to do. And then you realize that, no, that's not what he meant. He meant he really wanted me to do that. And remembering to communicate yourself that way, it seems to be a career-long process. And I think you're dead on when you point out that it's in the firehouse as well. I work in a department full of young guys, and they are they make up the majority of our workforce. And it takes a couple years before they begin to know you well enough to understand that the message that's coming across without having to work through the additional problems of being the new guy. And a good leader, as is true of all these principles, a good leader is not going to assume that he's always communicating well. He's going to pay attention to what's taking place, so that, and he's also going to pay attention to any feedback. I've had guys come to the door, they knock and say, "Cap, I know you thought you were right in that situation, but you know that's not the way he understood it." And they represent each other, and it's important that you listen at that moment and hear what your crew is trying to tell you, because your communication may be way off and causing a large majority of the frustrations within your house. So, very important principle. Number 10 is train your firefighters as a team. And that once again, seems like a pretty straightforward, basic kind of concept. But how many of us have experience with crews that don't operate as a team? You got your driver is focused on one thing and one thing only, and that's his rig, and keep your hands off the rig, don't touch it, just do your job, I'll do mine. The officer is out the door and gone before the team has had it, before the jumpsuiters have had time to grab their gear. As an officer, we need to function collectively as a team, and the team needs to have been communicated with. You want to put your strong members at the forefront where they excel best. Your guys that are new and perhaps in danger of being easily injured or becoming a problem on the fire round due to lack of experience, you want to place them where they need to be, where you can keep track of them. But at the same time, when you have those people that excel at certain jobs, you want to give them the freedom and the reign to go do and succeed. So the thing you want to focus on, the things that build teamwork. I love eating together. I like training together. I like playing together, going out, doing a little, tossing the football, throwing the frisbee, you know, whatever. You know, sometimes, you know, our guys play hockey a lot. I'm not a hockey player. It's a little too late to learn, I think. But, you know, they do a lot of that together. Anything that encourages teamwork is good for the fire service. And especially as a leader, you want to encourage that within your house. And with today's generation, you know, you hear a lot of complaints about how the new generation impacts the firehouse. Well, if your concept of teamwork is you need to fill this role as a probie, you're the new kid, this is what the new kid does, I'm going to go watch TV while you do all the work, that's not their understanding of teamwork, and they won't buy it. So that's another important principle. Number 11, is, and the last principle that we're talking about today, is employ your firefighters with their capabilities in mind. And it goes back to the teamwork, but whenever possible, we want to allow the talents that we have within our workforce to succeed there, whether we're talking about the fire ground or talking about the daily routine in the firehouse. People excel in certain areas, and encouraging them to grow in those areas, I personally think, is a very good way to help their career along, to build your teamwork, because not everybody is good at every aspect of the fire service. I've found in small departments, the mentality often is you have to be good at everything, and how come you're not? But that's not the way people work. Not everybody is an all-around handyman. So knowing where to plug your people in, knowing who is the best man for a particular job, is important for a successful leader to spot those things and make use of them. So those are the 11 principles that the Marine Corps uses, and I've simply changed the wording so they fit the fire service. And you and I were talking last night about how the comment has been made a few times recently in discussions with different folks about how the principles and the traits are, you know, yeah, we've heard of those before, but, you know, what else is there about leadership? Well, in my opinion, the principles of leadership are one of the key factors. Even though they're familiar to a lot of folks, that doesn't mean a lot of folks apply them. It doesn't mean that the average person out there looks at these principles and makes a conscious effort to adopt them in their everyday routine, on duty and off duty. And they're very important. They make a lot of difference. Yeah.
So, and not to put you on the spot, but looking at these 11 principles, you know, which one do you think is the easiest for, in your opinion, for a company officer, and which one do you think is the most challenging for us to do as a company officer?
Wow, good question.
That's why I'm
the host.
Hey, Ben.
Yeah.
Ben.
Yeah, Rich.
While you're pondering that over, and since Robbie threw it to you, and I want to throw a different spin on this because my role is a little different on my job. I'm not an officer. And as you know, that the mission I'm on with my other job with the Illinois Fire Service Institute, with us putting together a leadership program we've talked about last time we were talking and my trip to Quantico, how about which one of these is for the firefighter? I mean, a lot of people think leadership, and they tend to think officer. And I think chief of department. It's from the chief of department to the new recruit. Even a brand-new probie first day could have some principles of leadership. And I think that's a good question as far as which one's the easiest and hardest one to do and at what rank and what level.
I think that's a great comment, Rich. We could easily take these principles and modify them to fit any rank. I happen to focus on company officer leadership, but, you know, I began paying attention to these principles again and after I left the Corps. You know, I didn't think about such things again for a long time, and in particular, you know, I was an aircraft mechanic in the Marine Corps. I wasn't in combat. So your exposure to the principles of leadership, it wasn't something I did on a daily basis. I turned wrenches on a daily basis and tried to keep from getting run over or sucked up into an intake. That was my focal point. So, you know, when I began to lead in the fire service and I was searching for a compass to use, I went back to what I knew, which was the Marine Corps. But I wasn't an officer at that time. So I looked at those principles and I used them because that's my character is to look at what other people have done and I modify it to fit. And in particular, setting the example is a huge one for the young firefighter because one of the first things that comes up is, well, I don't like this, I don't like that, I don't like the way the officers do this, I don't like the way the chief does this, or why does our department do this? Or the one that really gets me going is, I can't wait to work for a real fire department. In my opinion, and the path I set myself on as a young firefighter was, I'm going to be the person that I want to be led by, because I couldn't see any other way to get started. And I was tired of waiting to work in a real fire department, so I simply decided that if I wanted to work in a real fire department, I needed to act like a real firefighter. And that's my answer to a lot of the young guys that come with that attitude, is when you, the person you are now is the person you will be later, unless you make a drastic change. If you want to see quality leadership, well, then you begin being a quality firefighter right off the bat. Set the example.
Begin with yourself.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes. And as a company officer, as a chief, to answer Rob's question, I think it's easy to be technically and tactically proficient. I think that's probably one of the easiest of the 11 principles. is knowing all the information. I know about fire behavior. I know about building construction. I know how to fill out paperwork. I know the department's routine. I know all the buzzwords. I can talk about incident management. I can talk about hazmat, whatever it is. It's easy to do those things. A lot of firefighters are very good at that. The really hard principles are the ones that have to do with the nuts and bolts of leadership, which is things like knowing your company members. Or it might be, for you, it might be keeping your people informed, because that might not be your personal, it might not be your personality to share information. I've known a lot of officers over the years that their mentality was, the less you know, the less trouble you can create. And they felt that they had control of things if they kept information to themselves. Maybe the hard one for you is the communication, as we were talking, or the one that really attracts my attention is, I think, taking responsibility for your actions. It is so easy to blame the other platoon, the other company, the chief. You know, we all have a chief that we attack. We all have a captain that, you know, kicks our bucket over and we don't like him. And it's hard to admit that maybe some of your own behavior is causing some of the trouble. And it's very hard when you are looking at your own crew as a leader, the people that you are directly responsible for supervising, or, you know, Rich, from your viewpoint, is the senior man, and there's probies in your company that are not performing well. Or you as the company officer, you're looking at your crew and they're not performing up to par. Who's really responsible for that? Is it because of Facebook? Is it because they're the new generation? Or is it because you have failed to identify the problems and address them? So there's more. Oh, go ahead, Rich.
No, go ahead. I'm still listening. You're good.
I was going to jump in. If keep on going, Ben, and when you're done, I wanted to jump in and talk a little bit more about what you were saying.
Okay. You know, a good example, Rob, you and I were talking about the driver's test I had conducted and the results of that. And before the issue was done, I pulled that driver aside. And I needed to make it clear that, you know, if you I'm a pretty easygoing officer. I laugh and joke with the crew a lot. And I had to say to him, you know, if my easygoing behavior is causing an issue with you understanding how serious and how earnest I am about safety or proper procedure, then I will not be joking around with you in the future. It's important that I do not trip you up in that manner. And I'm not saying that you have to kowtow to each individual firefighter's quirks and issues, but if I'm easy and happy-go-lucky with the crew, and then I blast them because they weren't taking me seriously, then perhaps I need to change my behavior with them on a regular basis. You know, if the crew is particularly lazy, and you come across as being one of the crew, and then you get your the seat of your pants rearranged by the chief because your crew's not toeing the line, well, how are you going to turn around and face them and approach that situation if you have not set the example already? Taking responsibility for all those principles is very hard to do when you take a look at it, and you maybe see that under the surface, you know, the surface layer looks like maybe that particular firefighter or that crew has got some serious problems, but you fold back the layers, where's the problem really at? What's the leadership there to begin with to prevent the problem from developing? So, does that answer your questions?
Yeah, for me, I'm looking at the list and I agree with what you're saying, and especially for the technical and tactical. Every evaluation I've ever done, on leadership and every class or conference, the thing that I've learned over the years of being a company officer is that it's easy for you to go to company officer as a firefighter and hold on to your technical side of things. That's our comfort zone. That's why going on a fire ground or going to a car accident or whatever it is, the EMS call, that's our comfort zone as young leaders, because we are comfortable with making decisions. We know how everything operates. We know our tools. We know our protocols, all that kind of stuff. But where we really are lacking as leaders is our ability to do all the other stuff, you know, which is all these principles you're talking about. And that's where we miss being that quality leader. Either what you were just saying about if you blast the guys because you're part of the crew too much, you know, your inconsistency on being having a baseline so they know when shit is good and when shit is not good, you have to be consistent with your crew. And that, you know, being a company officer for a period of time, that is a hard thing to do because you want to be a part of the crew. You want to be part of the guys and the gals and trying to separate that, but yet still build a formidable relationship so that you can do everything else, like being able to go out and have beers with the guys afterwards, doing an event or whatever it may be. But what I wanted to say that I think is becoming the most challenging of these principles is knowing your company members and looking out for their welfare. And I think that because our society is changing, we have more influences by, iPhones and computers. And I'm a tech-savvy kind of guy. I'm always on my phone or I'm checking stuff out, but it's separating us as people in the firehouse. You know, we're no longer sitting at the dinner table anymore. That's not something that you see on a regular basis. And I know some of the older firehouses and older departments, that's part of their normal culture. And when you come into those departments, it's just the way that it is. You know, you don't have any way of getting around it. But I look at my organization being fairly young. We've really only had a career fire department for about 40 years, 30 years really. And we've grown really quick over the last 15 years. Well, over the last 10 years of being in our house, that's one thing that we tried to do is everybody will eat dinner together. Now we have differing people and their diets and everything, but you know, if you're not going to eat the dinner, you are going to eat dinner with everybody together, so we're all sitting at the table as a family.
Right. No, I completely agree with what you're saying, Rob. And not only is it hard with all the influences that are taking place, but they're not accustomed. As this newer generation comes into the firehouse, they're really not accustomed to dealing with the structure that we have. And a member made the comment to me yesterday. He said, the first day or two, I really didn't know if I could pull this off. It was just so different from anything I'd ever experienced before. And in the older fire service, folks came to the job with experience from a variety of places. It might be construction, definitely a lot of military guys, hard-working folks that brought to the job an understanding that there's always a foreman, there's always a crew, there's always a a culture that you have to fit into and earn your way. And we're hiring folks out of high school quite frequently, and they haven't experienced any of that. And that's not 100%. It's certainly not the rule, but it is certainly a factor in some of the frustrations you hear about with the new generation. And recognizing that you need to invest that time is, I believe, it's critical. One of the struggles we have in our department is the constant demand to fill out data on the computer, the ANFERS, the training reports, activity reports. One officer is responsible to do all that, to evaluate all that work and make sure that it's all submitted in proper order. And then, you know, there's only so many officers in our tiny department, and, you know, each one of us has an area of responsibility. And at what point do you say, well, I have to get this done, or I could go out and maybe toss some ladders with the guys, or I could go out and teach them a few things about hose finishes, or I could just spend some time out with them in front of the fire station shooting the breeze, or listening to some of their problems, or going over the rig with them. Or, you know, there's so many things we could do that we would have done in the past that now is taken up by our more efficient technology, which ironically requires just as much, if not more, time than it did before to just fill out a piece of paper. And I think those things really affect our ability to know our crew as well. So you're right. I think the principles that are harder to achieve are the ones that are not as tangible, they're not as readily obvious, and it also varies depending on the type of leader you are.
Absolutely. You know, some people have a hard time with just setting the example. And,
yeah.
You know, once you get to being a leader, or, you know, we'll drop it out of a company officer and just to say, you know, the senior man in the house, like in Rich's case.
Yeah.
You know, how to set the example. I mean, when you really become the senior guy in the house, I mean, that is a huge responsibility, because it's no longer just like, well, he's been here for 15 years, he knows everything. You know, you really do need to know everything, and you need to be the guy that they can go to, and you need to be the guy that's all. You know, if you're going to expect the younger guys to always be the first one to get up and do dishes, the senior guy in the house, that doesn't mean that the senior guy can no longer do dishes anymore. In fact, the example is set when the senior guy says, I got it, and takes care of his own dish and washes his own dish. Now, he might not be doing all the dishes, but he's showing that by, you know, setting a good example of, I can do dishes too without having to do all the dishes, you know, and taking away that, you know, that what's supposed to be there for the younger guy, or with the rig, or whatever it may be. It's the same thing with the company officers. Is that if you want to, you know, if I want somebody to be following me, well, I better be a good follower myself. And that's where, you know, you can get yourself into some trouble, where, you know, you want to be a company officer that stands up for the company and slams their fist down and is arguing with the battalion chief or, you know, the upper management to defend something for your company and your crew, but yet you've got to be able to show it in a certain way that you are a good follower just as much as you're a leader, because you want them to follow you in the same sense. Otherwise, they see you slamming your fist down and saying, these guys don't know what's going on, they have no clue. Well, what do you think your firefighters are going to say about you as a company officer?
And that is probably one of the most, I would venture to say, in departments that are struggling or having some rough times organizationally, that is probably one of the most readily visible signs of your leader struggling is seeing that complaining going on in front of the crew. And, you know, I can I can what's a great example of that?
What's a great example of that? Do you guys ever see the movie Saving Private Ryan?
Absolutely. I don't complain to you, Riven. I complain up.
Right. Yes, that is one of the best utter examples of in the fire service. Me as a fireman, I shouldn't be complaining to the probie or the candidate or the rookie, whatever your department calls him. Not my job to complain to him. He may complain to me because I'm his role model, his mentor. Just so I may go to the lieutenant or the captain, whoever the ranking system is in your department, and so on and so on. Just like me as the firefighter, I shouldn't be tugging on the ear to battalion chiefs or the deputies or the districts or whoever, because not my place, not my job. And I think that movie does an excellent and a very tactful way of doing that, which I think a lot of people can relate to.
But, you know, the thing I find so beautiful about that scene in Saving Private Ryan is they're pointing out a principle of good leadership, but at the same time, you know, they're pointing out loyalty, but at the same time, they're being honest about real life. You have a tight-knit bunch of guys, just like an engine company or a ladder company or what have you. And we have all been there where you're standing there in front of the people you're leading, and you're perfectly aware that the situation you're in is bogus. They know it. You know it. The guy that gave you the order might know it. And you're standing there trying to sell it to them. And there is that moment where Tom Hanks says, well, if I was to complain, this is what I would say. But he still presents it in a responsible manner so that they can see where his loyalty lies.
Yep.
And I think that is a real blessing to have that mindset. And I don't think it comes easy. It comes with experience and maturity to understand that, yes, okay, guys, I can't snow you on this. I'm going to be honest and upfront. This is a screwed-up situation. But I tell you what, I know what the chief is trying to do, or I know what that other captain is trying to accomplish. Just a short while ago, I had a conversation with a young man who had contacted me. He just needed some advice. He needed someone to vent to. He was so frustrated about a typical firehouse issue, and I thought, man, this problem just rears its head constantly. And so I knew the routine that he was explaining to me as if it was happening in my own firehouse. And I said, well, you know, think about that guy that you're opposing. And try to look at it from his viewpoint and understand why it's so important to him that you leave this issue alone. And you may not agree with him by looking at his viewpoint, but you may have a better understanding of why he's resisting change so much. And that'll help you be patient. That'll help you ease that change in a little bit more. And there are those moments where we are confronted by absolute ridiculousness of the situation we're in, or you just don't have any more explanations for the crap that's going on, and the guys are looking at you like, really? Again? And you have to say something. You have to say, follow me, in a way that they're going to buy off on it. And sometimes that means you turn to them and you say, guys, I know this is a load of crap, but I'm going to eat it with you. I'll be the first one. So it's nice to say that we don't complain to them, but they also know a situation for what it is, depending on who you're dealing with, who your crew is. And there are those moments where your honesty with them about how difficult it is it makes you transparent, which is a leadership trait. The key is to not attack the authority you're dealing with. But in other words, You might hate the message, but try not to hate the sender. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Hey, and Robbie, will we send out the number lately to call in?
No, I haven't done it in a while. In fact, it's probably about that time to take a commercial break. But callers, if you want to participate in the conversation, we'd love to have you. We don't usually get very many people that want to call in. Most people just want to sit back and listen. But we'd love to have active participants that want to get on here and share their experience and be a part of it. Phone number is 760-454-8852. If you're listening to the podcast, don't call. If you're back in the room, I'll call on iTunes and a couple of days later. But if you're listening live right now,
hold on, Robbie.
Do that.
Robbie.
Yeah.
Ben, did that come in real garbly and echoey?
That was, I almost couldn't understand a word of that.
Really?
Me either. Okay. Hey, guys. I don't know why I came over that way, but once again, if you want to call in to talk radio, it's 760-454-8852, or you can also go to fireengineering.com. Go online. You can go on off your computer as well and listen to the show. So please call in. Hope to talk to you. We've probably got to do a commercial break here as well, and we still have yet to get to the traits. So we'll take a little commercial break. We'll be right back. Can you do that, Robbie?
Here we go.
With over 900,000 products and 31 diverse product categories, Grainger is basically an anything you need supply buffet. We've got everything from safety and electrical products to hardware, hand tools, and more, so you can efficiently purchase exactly what you need from one source, saving time and trouble. And just to be sure, the buffet thing was a metaphor. Please don't eat the stuff. Buy your supplies smarter. Just call, click Grainger.com, or stop by a branch today. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, I think we're back. Robbie, try to talk in just in case we figure that out.
Yeah, on your guys' end, I'm getting a lot of echoing. And Ellen just texted me and said that I'm real staticky. So it's...
Okay.
I'm muting when I'm not talking.
That's okay, it's cleared up now, whatever you did.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm muting. Let's go ahead and move on.
Well, did we want to? Is there anything with the principles we want to finish up with, or do we want to attack the traits?
I think we better attack the traits because I ain't even saying nothing because I don't want to because I think I'm a jabberjaw myself. We could talk about these traits and this whole show alone. I think you head to the traits and talk about each one because just my take. I think you can bring up each word and. How can you relate that to the fire service or what you can relate it to a call? I mean, I'm looking at these words, and a friend of mine who teaches this to me, Eddie Enright, who's a huge role model for me, he does something like this, and what does bearing mean to you? How can you relate that to the fire service? What is bearing on the fire ground or whatever? And yeah, I think we can tackle that because we could talk about the principles for another 3 hours.
Easily, very easily. So in setting about presenting traits, one of the things I like to point out is that traits they form your character, the person that you are and how you're perceived. And character is a combination of mental and ethical traits that mark you as a person. And there are the 14 leadership traits identified by the Marine Corps that I've adopted in my teaching are the traits of leaders that the Marine Corps has held up as the example that they want their Marines to strive to be like. And, you know, I knew an awful lot of Marine officers that did not measure up to that par. And I've known a lot of fire officers that didn't measure up to anything close. And yet, I've also known some of the most incredible leaders at the same time. There are always fewer excellent leaders because it is a high standard. It is not an easy thing to be recognized as an excellent leader. It's not an easy thing to achieve because you may be born with certain qualities that lend to successful leadership. But you still have to develop the skills and the traits that make use of your talent. I think everybody has known an officer who just is, or even a senior guy, he's just the natural leader anytime he's in the room, he or she. And that is all well and good most of the time until they take on roles and responsibilities they're not familiar with or they have little experience in or little knowledge of. And everybody just assumes they'll do well because they always have before. But if they haven't addressed these character traits, if they haven't addressed the principles, quite often those born leaders begin to fizzle at that point because they have not developed their skills. So the character traits we're talking about specifically are all familiar ones. And once again, I just want to point out that for anybody listening, that you might be thinking, oh, yeah, I'm familiar with these. I've read them. I was in the military. I'm familiar with them. It's one thing to be familiar with them. And like Rich was just saying, it's quite another to understand where they fit into the job as we know it. But real quick, the 14 traits we're going to talk about are justice, judgment, dependability, initiative, decisiveness, tact, integrity, enthusiasm, bearing, unselfishness, courage, knowledge, and loyalty. And one more, there's endurance. I like to add fortitude to that, and I'll tell you why later if we get that far. But just to start off, justice. That's a word that we equate with law enforcement or with lawyers and judges, and we really don't think too much about it as it applies to a leader. But justice is critical because if you do not have that as a basis for your leadership, you're apt to go awry when you are not honest with yourself, you don't take responsibility for your actions, when you use favoritism, if you're trying to be fair, but your fairness leans in a certain direction, people see that easily, and they see right through it. So you may score high points in a lot of different areas of leadership, but if you don't have justice buttoned down, you can wash it all away in a heartbeat because you only get so many chances with especially with young people. You only get so many chances to earn their respect, and we all know that leadership is about earning your place because you're only a leader if they allow you to lead. And by that I mean they're going to follow you if you earn that place. And their followership is what allows you to lead them. There's nothing like being the sole person running out in front of the trench, shouting charge, and the rest of them are sitting in the trench saying, oh, look at that knucklehead go. Who doesn't realize we're not there with him yet?
How do you think justice fits in the fire service? I mean, I'm sitting here thinking about justice and thinking about a definition of it. And I have some definitions and significance on each one of these traits. And I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to answer your question. You wanted to add something more?
Yeah, I was going to say, because reading it, with some of my research I've done on this, on these traits that you're talking about, I have for justice. Giving reward, punishment according with the merits of the case in the question. I think we're given rewards or merits. We're given reward and punishment. How do we put that in the fire service? You don't do something right, you do something right or wrong, you get a reward. You do something wrong, you get a punishment. Whether it's discipline, verbal, counseling, that's justice in the fire service. You did a good job. You get that attaboy. Someone gives you an attaboy. That's another Mac McCaslin and Eddie Enright's terminology, so I can't put my name to it, but some people just want that attaboy. You did a good job, and that's justice.
Exactly, but also some of the more hidden aspects of justice are being honest with yourself about about why you're choosing to do something a particular way. One of the things I really like about my supervisor, my battalion chief, is he and I'll sit down and have conversations over a cup of coffee and whatever the current dilemma is that we're trying to resolve. And he is really good at perceiving where my personality gets hung up, and he is able to help me ask some difficult questions about my motivation sometimes. And
okay.
when it involves the people you're leading, or it involves the greater good of the fire department that you work for, those can be some critical moments. A perfect example of that is our fire academy has a very militaristic aspect to it, and I am the one that brings that to the academy. And I was, I am appointed for that very purpose. The question arises, is that still applicable? Is it the most efficient thing we should be doing with our time, given that time is a rare commodity nowadays? Is that the best use of our recruits' time? Maybe it would be more important that we use that time for further skills. Those questions come up, and I'm pretty passionate about what I believe, and he's really good at saying, well, is this really what is wanted? Is it what is needed? And have you asked yourself that question? And this is one example in how he is able to help me do that. And it's not something I automatically do. I've had to learn, and to be honest, the chiefs that I work for directly, especially for the past 3-4 years, the pair of them have really helped me to learn to ask those questions to myself, and I'm really grateful for that. Nothing is worse than observing a leader who truly believes he's doing the right thing, but has not bothered to ask that question of himself. And they will follow that one with judgment. And judgment is, being able to see things clearly and remove your feelings out of it, and to do it in a way that is orderly and logical, so that you can make a decision that's the best for the situation. I tend to be hot-tempered. I tend to be a typical jarhead. I get loud, I get angry, and people see the visible signs. Oh, Flagel's getting, ticked off. That can affect your judgment because if you explode so quickly, you're unable to give yourself time to make a good decision. I've learned that sometimes, most of the time, it's better if I just separate myself for a few minutes and come back and deal with a situation I'm angry with. Or I've had to learn to keep my mouth shut for a while until I can come back with a more stable response. And in that time, while I discipline myself, I'm able to think through what I want to say. And that's where the judgment comes into play. Some folks are really good at they just naturally are very calm and able to make assessments about a situation very easily, and it's a natural trait that they're gifted with. Many of us are not so gifted. So, your rash decisions or decisions that are being made, if you find yourself saying things like, that's the way we've always done it, or that's the way I want it done, or these guys don't know anything about it, you don't know what you're talking about. Those are comments that should be warning signs, flags to you, the one making those comments, that you're not exercising good judgment. It's about being aware of your motivations, like we were talking earlier. Other times, judgment applies when you have to stop and think about a subordinate and why they have taken the action they've taken. And maybe you're perfectly justified in disciplining them or showing anger or taking the hard line. Maybe their actions have justified it. But maybe exercising a little judgment, you may choose to withhold that and take a very soft hand approach at that point because it's the right move at that time. It's the one that logically is going to bring about the best result because you've applied the principle. You know your employee well enough. You've taken the time to get to know them well enough that that is the right reaction for that moment. To make sure I'm being clear, the example I'm using is I've had employees who, either due to maturity or just their personality trait, their temperament has a tendency to cause the average officer to be impatient with them. You hear a lot of, I've had it up to here with that guy, or that guy's worthless, he doesn't need to be in the fire service. A lot of those comments will come around these people, and yet, if you have taken time to get to know them, if you've applied good leadership to them, you may be aware that that person actually will respond very well if you use the right tone of voice with them, or if you choose to withhold wrath at that moment. And that's where that's one of the aspects of judgment that's important, and important particularly in the firehouse on the daily basis when nothing's going on and people are getting bored and they're making mistakes or using poor judgment because we're firefighters. We want to be busy and we're not busy. We're sitting around and we're causing trouble for ourselves. So. That's an area where the traits and the principles blend quite a bit.
How about, do you agree these traits and principles will blend at the firehouse and on the fire ground? Because you
yes.
just gave the word judgment. I'm thinking judgment. Go to a fire. 2.5-story frame building. Report of people trapped on the second floor. I got to make a judgment call. Do I go above the fire maybe and search without the protection of a handline or not? Do I search left or right? Did I profile the building to see if the bedrooms are by looking at windows, window size, layout of the structure, floor below, or just from looking at the roof line, see what I can see from vents and soil stacks and stuff like that? That's judgment right there on the fire service, on the fire ground as well as at the firehouse.
Absolutely. No, a good example of that would be as an officer in the Arctic, I'm right in the thick of overhaul, or especially right after the fire's knocked down, you're in there with the crew. You're trying to direct them, make sure that we have control of the fire. It's not going to rekindle on us. We want to get it taken care of, get home, and rehab our equipment. But in the Arctic, that can be a prolonged experience because your job is much harder due to the conditions. Your equipment's freezing up. Pretty soon that mask and the regulator are no longer functional, and you want to rip them off and keep working because your work ethic, your the department culture, or just the pride in being an Arctic firefighter, you just keep at it. And I'll take my mask off and I'll be breathing this smoke because I'm an Alaskan and that's what we do. We just deal with it. There's nobody to replace me. We got low manning. So it's nothing to be outside at 50 below for 8 hours, and you just deal with it. But good judgment might rearrange that thinking, because I take my mask off, and I've noticed the very first thing that happens after I do that is that all the guys behind me take their mask off, because if the captain's taking his mask off, well, then I can take my mask off. And I may have had a good reason. Maybe I really needed to get it off so that I could see without the ice in front of my face and make a judgment call about what we're doing. But they don't know that. All they saw was that the officer took his mask off. Maybe I've decided that I'm just going to suck it up and deal with it. and but I don't want them doing that. But it's not that simple. So I don't know if I'm making myself clear on that issue. But there are a lot of judgment calls to be made on the fire ground, and a lot of them are not. It certainly isn't hard to come up with the scenarios like you just suggested, choosing the right victim to go after or doing the profile. It might be as simple as knowing when and when not to go after the fire, simply because it's gone beyond what is reasonable for the risk of the crew. Are we playing, or are we? Go ahead.
I said, I guess, and I just, the point I was probably should have just said is, as I listen here, look at the traits, talk about the principles we talked about earlier. I want people to get the idea or the impression this just isn't Firehouse. This is ultimately, and you can answer this because you were one as a Marine, as my boss down at the Institute is, Colonel Mortensen. He lives this in everyday life for him. I mean, he's to that level. He's that type of a role model. But these leadership traits and principles, that's on the fire ground, at the firehouse, in your life. I mean, if you live by these and you were squared away with these, you'd be a pretty phenomenal person in life, pretty phenomenal father, husband, firefighter, you name it. And these fit everywhere. And look at these words as how they fit. Look at these traits and how they fit on the fire ground, at the firehouse, at home, off duty, whatever.
Hey, Richie,
absolutely.
And just pointing out that you know, one of the principles was to be clear and concise, and you just said, oh, I probably should have just said from the very beginning what you just said now, you know, and violating a principle, how easily we overlook some of these things, and you know, sometimes it is retrospect that you go, oh man, I blew that, or I should have just done this and could have saved me some time. The only other point I want to make is that I think what you're bringing up, Richie, is, you know, the example you gave about the two-story or two-and-a-half-story wood frame is that, you know, these don't always apply. I mean, they do apply to company officers and the formal leader on the fire ground, but we all, as firefighters, are informal leaders, hopefully, and we all are going to be making decisions, basing a lot of decisions, in that, you know, these are things that we need to be applying if you're the driver, if you're riding backwards, you know, or if you're the company officer. And I think your example was a good example to show that you're using judgment to make a decision.
And both firefighters and officers can improve their skills at judgment by avoiding rash decisions and taking that common sense approach. It's a good way to build your habit of including judgment into your daily life. Interestingly enough, the next thing is dependability. At every level, every rank, dependability is crucial. And so much more so for the officer. But you begin developing that trait as a firefighter on your very first day when you walk through the door. And I can't think of dependability is just one of the hallmarks of my goals for myself have been that I want to be known as being dependable. One of the quickest ways to get me in line is to point out that, you know, maybe I'm showing up late to the meetings, or you know, maybe some of my guys are looking a little shabby, or maybe maybe it's something else. But I want to be known as a dependable person, and I've always had that attitude. When I was a probie, when I was a driver, because those things translate into more responsibility. They translate into being allowed to do more. They translate into that's the man I want right there, because I know he's dependable. I know the quality of work he does. So many opportunities open up to you when you're known for being dependable. And you know, you want to practice dependability by being where you're supposed to be on time. Don't make excuses in being accountable for your own actions. And making sure that, you know, whether you're wiping down the fire engine or whether you're mopping the bay floor, scrubbing behind the shitter, whatever task you're doing, filling out fire reports, you're doing what you're supposed to do to the level that you're supposed to do it at. And I tell you, there are a lot of times, both on and off the fire ground, when you just don't feel like going that extra mile. But when you're known for being dependable, you will be given that much more to handle. And most firefighters want that. They want to. Whether they may not have aspirations for rank, but most firefighters want to be known as dependable. But in order to get that reputation, you have to work at it.
Yeah, I don't think that's a quick and easy one to come by. That's something you definitely have to build up to.
Yeah, I'm still working on it. Someday I plan to graduate, but it hasn't come about yet.
I see some of these traits as people have right away. They're already instilled in them because of their background, their upbringing, maybe their role models in life. Like, my father probably put a lot of these in me, and not even relating it to the fire service, even though he's a fireman. I often say he didn't teach me much about the fire service, and I don't think he'd be offended by that, but he taught me a lot about life. And so some people may come in with some of these, and some you probably don't even know you have or need to have to even be a firefighter or to work in our atmosphere.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing that I'd like to say about dependability before we move on is whether I'm doing a class, teaching particular skills, whether I'm working with recruits, or, a task around the firehouse or a task on the fire ground, I make the decision about who's going to be doing that job for me based on dependability. The person I choose may not be the best at that particular skill, but you can be highly skilled and not be dependable. And so therefore you're not something that anyone's going to want to take to the bank. You know that firefighter who is pretty gifted in just about anything he or she chooses to do, but are they going to show up when you expected them to? When I can think of a couple different instances where the firefighter that I was counting on failed to be where they were supposed to be on the fire ground when we had agreed or I had anticipated or policy and procedure dictated that they should be there. And when you investigate into the situation and you go find them, sometimes their enthusiasm gets them carried away. Or off-duty, their judgment did not come into play and they're not able to carry through with their skills because their judgment derailed them and they're still sleeping it off the next morning. You know, you've known fire careers that were destroyed because of poor judgment, and that directly affects dependability.
I got to read something and say one thing, if I could, Ben. It's funny you say that because I, unfortunately, you guys, I cannot stay much longer. I've been gone for all week teaching, and I missed my daughter's soccer game tonight to do this. So they're all home now, and we still have yet to do dinner. So I'm really going to have to cut off soon. But just what you brought up about dependability or making poor judgments. I used to have a T-shirt, and I think I mentioned his name more than once tonight, Eddie Enright. And he does a duty pride tradition class and his own stuff, and it's phenomenal in my opinion. But point being is, I used to have a T-shirt, and it said Chicago Fire Department on the front, right? Maltese closed door sold it. On the back, it was the Three Stooges and their fire stuff from their skit they did. Another one was I'm off duty, save yourself. And a buddy of mine had that shirt. After hearing Eddie Enright talk about these traits or his, what he uses or what he talks about, I've never worn that shirt again. In fact, I threw it in the garage. My wife's like, why don't you donate it? Because you can be wearing it, no one else should. And I will no longer wear a shirt that puts my department or the fire service in a bad light. I didn't get it. I was a younger kid, came on the job. Cool, Chicago shirt, I'll wear it. I love the Stooges. Didn't get the correlation how the Maltese Cross, the fire department, and the Three Stooges really don't go together.
You know, Rich, that is pervasive in the fire service these days with stickers and T-shirts and, you know, the Chive On thing. And all of that, the modern culture, it takes someone with their head on a swivel paying attention 24/7 to what's going on around them. Because just because society as a whole has accepted a change in attitude doesn't mean that it's a good change for the fire service. We're public servants, and we are held to a higher standard. And you know, we could talk forever about the you know, the girls on the fire engine on duty or in the firehouse with the photographs and the, you know, or some of the slogans that guys are wearing around off duty. It's just, it's not good practice, it's not good judgment, and it does affect your dependability because it affects the perception that people have of you as a public servant. We need those people on our side, and if we exercise poor judgment in our off-duty time and our personal vehicles, that does affect their perception, and it affects things at voting time. It affects a lot of the attitude and perception that lead directly affects our job and our funding and our benefits and all the things that we're struggling with now. So, absolutely.
You're right on.
Excellent point. Well, initiative is the next trait, and everybody tends to know what initiative is. It gets confused.
I'm going to take the initiative to leave at this point so I keep the family happy. I'm sorry I have to go. I think we're going to go, what, an hour or something? You guys keep going. Do your thing. That's awesome. And thank you, Ben, for being here and doing this. And thank you, Robbie, for as well being here and doing this and keeping things on track as well and organizing. You guys are the best.
All right, brother. Have a good night. Give the family love.
Take care, Rich.
Stay safe, brothers. All right, stay safe, brothers. Hope I see you soon. If not, it will for sure be in September, I hope.
Okay.
Ben, you going?
It's not for certain yet, but there will be a couple guys from our chapter.
All right, well, if not, my best to you and the family. Same to you, Robbie, and take care and keep the show running.
Thanks, brother.
Take care, brother.
Thank you, guys.
Hey Ben, before you get going on, I wanted to jump in and I was just letting you guys talk because you guys had a good you guys had some, you know, something good going on there. But going back to the dependability and just from the perspective of as the company officer, you know, and you were using the example, you go to somebody that's dependable. They may not always be the guy that has the ability or the right knowledge to be able to do it, but you're looking for somebody that you can count on as dependable. And with that, I would caution supervisors or company officers that don't always pick on the same guy just because that person is dependable, because the other two buffoons that you have working for you or the other one you have it, do your job as a company officer and still give them work to do. I mean, there's, we could, from the principles or from our traits, there are other things that we would be lacking as a company officer if we always picked on the same person, because you're like, man, this is easy. It's real easy as a company officer to go, hey, I got this project that needs to be done. You always go to your number one guy, always give it to them. That number one guy gets overworked because they are too dependable. And now you're lacking or you're missing the other parts of being a company officer, and that is, if somebody doesn't work so well or is not as dependable, what can we do to get them to see the light and get them to, you know, to kind of like equal out the work?
That that is right on, Rob. And, you know, I can be guilty of that very easily. And it's true of a department where everybody's been together for a very long time, and it can be just as true in a place like mine where there's a constant rotation of personnel. Because as long as you have that dependable guy, you're going to lean heavy on him. And, you know, you said the two goons you got with you that, you know, may not be as dependable. It takes a forward-looking officer with, you know, with intent to show folks like that the right way to do their job. And it takes a lot of patience to do that, and also a willingness to accept responsibility for the mistakes or the lack of dependability that you're going to encounter dealing with them. And I think that's why that doesn't happen a lot of times, is you have a choice to make: the two buffoons or the dependable guy. And you don't want to choose those buffoons because you know they're going to screw up. You know that you're going to have to explain it. You know, it's just easier to go with the dependable guy. It's a good point you bring up.
And, it's just like, you know, I think that it's like you, the easy way sometimes is, you know, you got this thing, you need to get it done. You just go to somebody you know that's going to get it done, and then you don't even have to worry about it anymore. And that, you know, at times that's okay. But it's the times that it's always that way, then I just see it as it's a company officer that's just not willing to do their job, and that their job is to mentor and coach and lead and help others. And that because they don't do their job, then it ends up becoming a problem for the entire company. And if you just were to stand up and you know, it's okay for those guys to make a mistake and accept that. It's almost like, you know, when you're not doing your job, you're taking the path that's always traveled, as opposed to taking the one least traveled, and that takes a little bit more work. And for me, that's the issue. I've been a part of times where, you know, I'm going, why am I doing this? You know, I just got done with a major project, and as a company officer, I've definitely dealt it out that way and sat back and went, man, I just have given Chad or whoever I'm working with too much to do. So, but I just wanted to point that out, just for the other part of it, is just like, just because we have dependability and we're talking about dependability, is don't overuse that on your crew.
Very good point, Rob. And, you know, we could go on about that for quite a while. And the dependable guys are often the ones that take the initiative. And taking initiative to define what we're talking about is, you know, those acts that you take, even though you haven't been given a directive or orders to do that, that further the goal of the organization or the company or the fire attack. And it also includes being aware of your situation so that you can react to unexpected things that come along, taking prompt action without having to wait for orders. There's no efficiency in the officer that sits there and waits, well, I haven't been told to do that, so I'm not going to do it. If you look through history, I love military history, and there's countless examples of officers who would not take initiative because in the past, when they had taken initiative, they got browbeat to the point where they learned that taking initiative was a bad thing to do. And so in the end, you develop people who their understanding of following orders is, okay, so the message reveals that I am to take the following action, and the following action will probably result in a big hole in our line, and the enemy or the hazard will get through. But I've been given an order. I'm not going to be the one to defy that order, so I'm going to carry it out, even if it's detrimental. And you'd think, well, that doesn't make any sense. But it happens because people have been beaten down to the point where they won't take initiative, where they've never been given the environment where they can take initiative and see that it can be successful. That goes back to micromanagement. It goes that goes into so many of the different traits and principles, where you let your people, you let your subordinates move forward. They're going to make mistakes. But in order to learn initiative, they got to have the opportunity to make those mistakes. That being said, to improve yourself in taking initiative, you want to be mentally and physically aware of your surroundings. Whether, you know, for example, you walk into the firehouse in the morning, Rob, you've been at 72s for a long time. You walk in the door, I have no doubt, as well as I know you, that you're looking at the wheels, you're looking at the bumper, looking at where the ladder's placed, did it get bedded properly, you're paying attention to the gravel in the corners of the floor in the app bay. You walk into the kitchen, you notice whether the dishes were done, or whether they were done well. You just pick up on those things immediately because as a good officer, you're absorbing that information. It doesn't mean you're going to address each one just because it might be out of place, but you're just absorbing that information, and that's what we mean by being mentally alert. On the fire ground, you're doing a size-up continually. You're not just that guy that gets his orders and gets tunnel vision, goes right at it. So staying alert in those ways are very important for taking initiative, because those are the cues that tell you that initiative is different from freelancing.
Mm-hmm.
And those might be the things that save the day, depending on the circumstances. So decisiveness is the next... Oh, go ahead, Rob.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, you're right. I do look, as I'm walking in, I am looking at the rig, and I'm looking at... the one sense that hits me is as soon as I walk in the door, as I... my olfactory is kicking in, and did they get a fire while I was on the day off or the 5 days off? I'm smelling for that first. And the next thing I'm smelling for is the coffee ready?
Right.
And once I get the coffee in the hand, now we can go and do more in observing and use my eyes and start looking at things. But no, you're right. I see what you're saying, and I think that's one of the ones that it takes time on the job. It doesn't matter if you're a company officer or not. You could, you know, Richie's position as a senior man on a squad, I'm sure he comes in. His focal might be a little bit tunneled in a little bit more, you know, a little less in his position, right, and maybe in the iron spot or something. He's looking at the bar. He probably knows his bar inside and out. And he can tell, like, man, it looks like the bar got beat up on my last several days off. You know, they must have had a job or some good work while I was gone. And, that can be applied across the board, driver, firefighter, company officer, you know. But I think it just – that's something that gets built in time. You start being more observant to those things. You don't even recognize that you're seeing them. And then you pick up on these things, and then somebody just kind of looks at you and like, how'd you know that was out of place? Or how'd you know that was – What clued you into that? Like, well, I've looked at that for 15 years, and there's something wrong with it, you know. But
right. And I love that trait in my subordinates. When just the other day, I walked out in the apparatus bay, and the driver's washing the ground ladders. It wasn't the day for it, but he took the opportunity, took the initiative, because our particular ladder design, the ground ladders are coated with road dirt on a constant basis. On every time we go out of the bay, they're getting sandblasted by the road, and he made the comment, yeah, well, they'll be dirty within an hour after I put them back on the rig, but I'm doing it anyway. And I was grateful for that. I really was. The guy is getting up on top of the cab and scrubbing the cab, even though most people don't see it. Or you know, the guy that's really in tune with his rig, even though maybe he's not the normal driver for that piece. I love that, because I feel like the guys are embracing the job. They're enjoying what they're doing, and they're taking responsibility for what they've been given. And in an officer, boy, you know, you've been filling that seat for a long time, and you've had some maybe good experiences, and you get lax, or you've been beat up so much by those that lead you that you just, you're not going to stick your head out there anymore. And so you come to work, and instead of noticing all those things as you walk through the door, which instead you're eager for that moment when you can get away from the crew, sit down, and look up the boat that you're going to buy this summer. And that's what's on your mind. And, you know, you chuckle, and
yeah.
And I know why you're chuckling, because you know that that's an ever-present
thing
that you have. Yeah, you got to fight that. And
if it's not boats, they're looking at guns.
Yeah, heaven forbid, you know. And I'm not knocking, you know, we all have access to the internet on a regular basis at the firehouse, especially if you're the company officer. It takes some self-discipline. It embarrasses me if a company member walks in and sees that I've been browsing the internet instead of doing my job.
Yeah.
I'm not always successful, but because I'm human like everybody else, but there's a time for doing that. There's a time for the TV to be on. There's a time to be in my bunk with my feet up. And those times are limited for the officer. And I take advantage of them when I get the opportunity, but that's part of being an officer.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's a lot of guys that would say, well, you know, I disagree with you. I work hard. At 5 o'clock, it's downtime for the whole crew, and I'm going to take advantage of it. Well, you know, that's fine. That's not my personality. But, you know, I guess what I'm saying is you have to use some good judgment and some self-discipline and know when those times are going to be acceptable to the crew and when it's going to set a bad example.
When it's appropriate.
Yeah,
I think what stands out the most, though, is you know, you should be able to kick back every once in a while. You should be able to you know, get online, either, you know, you're on Facebook pulling off an article or, you know, a blog or whatever it is. But I think what really stands out with the crew is that when it's the inappropriate time, and that's what makes it worse. And
yeah,
and that alone is, that's a hard thing to do, is like, when is it time to be able to do that? And, you know, and that it goes back to judgment, which is one of the other traits that you've already, you know, talked about, but having the good judgment of when do we need to do this, you know? And before I let you go on, for those that are not company officers, younger firefighters that might be listening, man, you want to earn your salt on the company. The one thing that I think you can do out of all of these is initiative. And that...
Absolutely.
I'll take initiative over courage, over knowledge, you know, over a lot of different things, just because you can give them some of these traits. But to teach somebody initiative is almost impossible. You know, that's something that has to be brought up over years, and that it becomes a part of your character.
You know, at the risk of not getting through the rest of the traits, I just have to say, you know, as an officer, you begin to appreciate certain character types, and I enjoy having the typical classic type A personality, the aggressive, athletic, adventure-seeking types. I like having them on the crew because in a firefight, they're the ones that are, they love it. They're in tune with it at that moment. They it's everything you want. And the skinny little quirky guys that take more work, you got to try twice as hard to teach them how to pull the hose and hold on to the nozzle and how to not take their shins out with the axe or the chainsaw. And those guys take a lot of work in the downtime, but sometimes those are the guys that have the initiative. Sometimes it's not the football player types that are showing initiative. they tend to rely on their natural born skill or the skills that they've honed in sports, and they have a tendency to rest on their laurels a lot. And, you know, kind of like, you know, the old adage about keeping the, you know, break the glass if you have a fire, you know, that's when they function best. And if there's no fire going on, then they're really not interested. And so initiative is like you said, it's, you take it every time because it is so rare and yet it's so critical to what we're doing.
It can make up for a lot of things when you have initiative. And
yeah.
And it's like one of those, I think it's one of those traits that if you have initiative, a lot of the other ones you either are going to have, or you just haven't found out about them, or you don't even know you have it yet, you know. But initiative is like a foundation trait, in my opinion, that when you have that one, knowledge comes. Because with initiative, that means you are going to seek the knowledge. Loyalty comes with it. Enthusiasm comes with it. Just so many of these other ones fall or are built upon the foundation of initiative. But so, well, I'll let you get going on the rest of your traits here.
Okay, well, decisiveness. Making good decisions and not taking all day to make that decision. And that means having the facts at hand and weighing them out and calmly making your decision. And then communicating that decision clearly to your crew without screaming or without, I have a tendency to growl when I give orders. I admire those guys that sound like they're sitting at their desk the whole time. The reason this is important, as I'm sure you know, Rob, is whether it's dealing with decisions that are going to affect the daily schedule or the normal routine, or whether it's a decision on the fire ground, whether you're an officer or whether you're a firefighter, the ability to rapidly determine your course of action and take that action is important, especially in our profession. How do you get there? You get there by practicing being positive in your actions, and that takes knowing your job. That takes the situational awareness. That it takes accumulating knowledge. And if you're a brand new firefighter, that means knowing your basic skills very well. It means taking the initiative to learn the new house, learning the crew, learning the officer that you're working for. If you're the officer, it means being up to date on policies and procedures, being up to date on fire behavior, being up to date on building construction, being up to date on what the chief's desires are for his department, so you can make a quantitative decision based on what you know the mission statement of the department is. Do you know the mission statement of the department? Our current chief has made a real clear difference in our department, at least for myself, by simplifying the mission statement in a manner that makes a lot of sense to everybody, but particularly freeing us up to make our decisions based on the mission statement instead of, am I going to get in trouble? So, you know, the watchword is check the mission statement. If it matches the mission statement and our vision, well, then go with it. You know, it makes a big difference in an officer's ability to have initiative if he's able to exercise his decision-making ability based on those guidelines. And so you have to know what those guidelines are. You have to have taken the time to learn them. Tact. Here's another one I struggle with. I want to be honest and open about that because I think it's important as we discuss these traits and principles that particularly you and me, Rob, sitting here in this forum, we need to be honest and open about who we are, so that people listening, especially the young guys, can see that this is a process that takes time. Tact is an issue for me because I'm straightforward about how I feel. People can see how I feel. They can read my face. They can read my arms crossed over the chest, and they can tell that I'm setting myself against them or I'm enthusiastically supporting them. And I'm not very politically correct sometimes. I have a tendency to be right at the source of what I see the issue being.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, when we were talking about tact and using, you know, you're probably going to back this up with an example, but being straightforward. Now, tact is one thing, but being straightforward, kind of a no bullshit, you know, that is an important thing to have, and it works a lot because now you don't have dancing around the issue. You you know, they can pretty much read you like a book when you say, hey, you know what, I'm going to give you my honest opinion, and but it's how you approach it, which is the tack on this thing. And
exactly.
What I was going to say,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say what I was going to say is that, you know, just recently in our organization, we've contracted to do a lot of leadership training. And I think it's great that our department has recognized where we're lacking in our leadership. But we did these, 360 evaluations of us by anybody in the department. And one of the things that came up was one of the tools that they're looking at is, does the person, meaning me, does the person allow the other individual to save face? Meaning that, you know, am I going to come out and show them up in front of everybody? Am I going to call them out? Even if I'm being direct to the point, have I chosen the right tack to be able to address the issue? And like you, you know, I didn't get very good markings on that. But I'm also one that, you know, I've always come out and said, hey, I'm going to tell you like I see it, and I'm not always right, but that's just how I see it until I'm convinced otherwise. So it's about how I'm going to, you know, how I'm going to approach the situation is the key with the tack.
Very much so. There have been times when I thought I was being very tactful, only to find out later that I misunderstood the situation. But being polite and being calm but being firm is exercising good tact. The key to that is recognizing that you're in a situation, or recognizing that you're dealing with a particular person who you're in danger of not exercising good tact. And so you take steps to avoid that. I like what you said about giving them an opportunity to save face. There are times, especially firefighters in the firehouse, we are like sharks in a shark pit. And if we see a guy stumble and there's an opportunity to go in for the kill, many of us will go in for the kill because we do it jokingly, and then and we form that habit. And then when there's an argument, we can be kind of vicious on each other from time to time. But also, due to the environment we work in, there are times when you're so frustrated with either the subordinate or with the supervisor you're dealing with that your tact fails to come out as you vent to your frustrations. This is, like I said earlier, it's taken me a long time to get a handle on, and I would not be the judge of that. I'd have to ask my peers as to whether I've succeeded in changing my skill with tact. But one of the things that's helped me is to remember that not every battle has to be fought, and not every battle requires everything I've got. I don't have to throw my full punch into every situation. A friend of mine said, you know, you've only got so much change in your pocket. And if you spend it all on little silly issues, you're going to run out of change. And now,
yeah.
In other words, you have no more credibility. You've got nothing more to spend on the big issue when it really mattered, because everybody sees you as that guy that scraps over everything. So that really got my attention.
It could be that then you become the individual that is always confrontational, that is always wanting to stir the pot, because every battle you go to, or every issue, you go to it as a battle to win. And you know, you can easily be misinterpreted as, you know, you are in the fight to win, and that's it. And hopefully, you know, your issue that you're talking about, that you're dealing with, is something that you know, it isn't just about the fight. It's more about it's a change that needs to happen, or whatever it is. But got to be really careful in basically how you approach it. And the other thing I wanted to say with the tact is that there's a lot of times that we screw that up, where you as a leader, as a company officer, can show your professionalism is when, after everything is said and done, you've realized that you've made that mistake. You are able to rectify, resolve the issue, apologize in the way, to do it in the right manner, so that you've acknowledged the fact that your approach to this issue or approach to the problem wasn't the best way for whatever reason. You got emotionally involved in the situation or whatever, you know, and that's, I just think of there, when I go to retire out of the fire service, that's about when I'm getting about 70% good at what I'm doing, because it takes all of these years of practice. I mean, that's why doctors are always practicing medicine. They're not, you know, they don't know it all.
Right. So we move on to integrity. That's one of the buzzwords that we like to throw around the firehouse. It's on the oral boards. It's a constant query. Do you know what integrity means? Can you define integrity? And the funny thing is, quite often the people asking the question struggle greatly with that trait. It's very simply being honest and truthful in what you say and what you do. And you know, you frequently hear the pat answer is not only what you do in front of people, but what you do when people aren't looking. And that is true. It's something that, like all the other traits, you develop over time by practicing. It might be something as simple as you tell the guys to police up the area, clean, pick up the trash, pick up little bits of junk in the apparatus bay, clean up the bunk room. But you're the first one to walk by something sitting on the floor and step on it, and you know it's there, but you don't feel like picking it up because the guys will get it. But someone with integrity is going to bend down and pick up that trash and throw it away to set the example. But also, if they're not looking, just to practice having integrity. This is a simple example, but there's so many different applications of that.
I think you're right on. I was just going to say, I think you're right on. When your integrity is something that is like any skill, you have to, I was in one of my college classes, Christian Worldviews, and one of the things in this class was me not being the most religious person, but everybody else in the class was fairly religious, and you know, they go, well, you get your integrity and you get a lot of your characteristics and your personality through God. And where I look at it as, yeah, you could base it a lot on religion and a lot on the stuff that we were talking about in class, but I look at it as the integrity of an individual
has to be constantly practiced at all times. There are people that are very religious, for instance, that probably had a lot of integrity that make stupid decisions, and where did they lose it, and why did they lose it? And that, as you were using in your example, if you're not practicing all these little times to have integrity, the big issue is going to come down the road, and it's going to be that much harder to able to use your integrity to stay upon it.
I agree, Rob. And you know my personal faith, and the way I view that is I think God created the human trait of integrity based on Himself. And it doesn't matter whether you're religious or not, you have the capability of having integrity, because it's about honesty and the sense of duty, and it's about having principles. You can have integrity to an evil purpose. You can have integrity to a pure purpose. It's just a way of describing your loyalty to those principles. In the fire service, we're talking about the principles, the moral principles that define our act of service to the public. So if if our responsibility is fiduciary, if it's taxes, using the taxpayers' money wisely, integrity is critical. If it's being honest and taking good care of our crew, integrity is vital. If it's having the integrity to admit that you are no longer able to perform in a manner that will not endanger your crew, how many officers can't bring themselves to admit that? You know, integrity applies all across the board in everything we do. And gosh, I can think of many examples of leaders or people that were in leadership positions that were highly respected who, because of the integrity issue, have bit the dirt hard. And, name the organization. You can find an example, the IRS today. The news is all about the IRS and the lack of integrity going on there. And when, 9/11 really brought the fire service back into the public eye. And for how long have there been those stickers about being a hero and being the one to fight what you fear? And, I do what you're afraid to do. I run in while everybody else is running out. And, that has built up in the public's mind not only a perception of what we will do for them, whether it's reasonable to expect it or not, but it also has created the awareness that we're kind of arrogant about what we do, and that causes problems for us as well. Integrity means that we use good judgment about that hero worship. But we're not all heroes. We don't all die in heroic ways. And that's a touchy subject with a lot of firefighters. There are times when we get killed showing an absolute lack of integrity to the crew, to the department, and our family, and the people we serve, because we weren't doing what we were supposed to doing, and that's why we died. Or that's why we caused someone else's death. Integrity is a foundational block. You mentioned that earlier when we were talking about initiative. Integrity is foundational. And I think if you're going to pick certain traits as being more important than others, I don't know how you could go wrong by picking out integrity as your first one.
Absolutely.
Enthusiasm. I won't dwell on that one too long because we need to get moving. But believing in what you're doing is so important. It contributes to everything else that we're talking about. As an officer, your enthusiasm for being a leader is critical. If you are in the rank because for whatever reason you justify it to yourself, whether it's to pay or because it enables you to not have to work as hard, or you're a senior man and it's just your turn. Those are not valid reasons to call yourself a leader. And enthusiasm for what you're doing can be developed. It's not something that comes natural to everybody. And I'm not necessarily talking about your personality. A lot of people are very humdrum about life in general, and that can be mistaken for a lack of enthusiasm for the job. But I'm specifically talking about understanding what it is you're supposed to be doing as a leader, and whether the job is interesting or not, you're going about it the way you're expected to. You're dependable. You're showing initiative. Whether it's the most fascinating job or not, we all have a part to play, and we're not always going to have the best job. The RIT officer standing by the sidelines, he can stand there and talk about what he's going to do at the next set off, the next Kelly break, or he could be paying attention to what's going on the fire ground, ready to do his job, even though statistically he won't have to do it. If you know where I'm going with that. Maybe you're the guy that's stuck doing accountability, or maybe you're the person that's doing an overhaul, and all you ever get to do is overhaul because your station's so far out, you're never first due, you're never even second due, you're lucky if you're fifth due. So you're stuck doing salvage or whatever. And there are other contributing factors to that, but enthusiasm is a hallmark of a leader.
I think when you have lack of enthusiasm, you have complacency. And using your example of RIT, you know, who wants to be in the front yard with a tarp down with a bunch of tools on it looking at a building? If you're not enthusiastic about the assignment that's been given to you, that's when we have the holes for complacency, and that's when eventually, because you're not doing your job, that's when somebody can get hurt.
Right. Yeah. We could go on about that one. Bearing.
Yeah, we're running a little bit low on time here, so.
Is there any particular one you want to go over?
You know, I'm curious to hear what you want to say about courage.
Ah, another foundational one. I think courage is foundational because it's one thing to be courageous in that you're willing to go and fight fire. You're willing to enter that dark hallway. I've known some very brave men who confessed that the first time the first night as a company officer, particularly in our department with all our young guys, a new officer will come in and he thinks he's ready for the job. He's got several years experience, but it was always with people his own age or people older than him. And then that call comes in at 3 a.m. For a fire, and you run to the rig and you got all these young, enthusiastic people jumping in the rig, and you realize how little experience they have. And all of a sudden, your heart's in your mouth as you realize, oh crap, I'm responsible for all these people. The decisions I make, the things I do, are going to directly affect these people.
Well, I just brought in. I just brought in.
Okay, there's interference. I didn't hear what you said, but I think you just brought somebody into the conversation.
Yeah, I think I brought in Gillian. Are you there?
Hello?
Hello?
Who's this?
It's Gillen.
Hey! No, we Scott.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. Going good. Good to hear your voice, brother.
How's it going? It's good to be you guys. It's going good. And we're listening. Travis McDonough and I are sitting here over beers listening to you guys talk.
Awesome.
All I got out of that was you were having beers. Talk.
There you go. See, that's insane. That's good. See, you're picking up the lingo. It's good.
What do you got to say? Because we got just a little bit of time left. Jump in. Give me your perspective on this, Tone.
Well, I think with some of the chances and stuff you're going on with, it's one thing you've got is what I look to in a leader, what I look to come to office is decision-making. You know, the ability to make a quick decision, stand by it, but if something's going wrong, to quickly deviate to the right decision. You know, and that's something that a young fireman, an older fireman, someone who's been around a little while, looks forward to and needs. You know, that constant ability to change direction at the opportune time. And know the plan's not working, to deviate from it and not go with ego. So I think both
you
gentlemen obviously have that ability.
And Tony, I think you're absolutely right. In our hurry to get through the traits, we really didn't cover that part of the decisiveness, but that is the definition of decisiveness, is making a decision. And boy, you know, the crew will forgive you if you go, you know, hey guys, that was a wrong move. We need to get over here, and we need to adjust our game here. They'll make that adjustment with you when you're upfront and honest about it, and don't spend a lot of time making excuses. We don't always give them credit for their ability to know the crunch that we are in as leaders, and they respect a leader who, having made a wrong decision, can make the correct one and take action.
I think that's really important. I think both you gentlemen have that ability. But, I mean, that takes time, it takes experience, it takes confidence in yourself and your abilities and the knowledge of your crews. You know, and what, and I mean, you put your crew in harm's way and you expect them to be able to perform. But you also, you work with the crew to know their limitations. You're going to have strong links, you're going to have weak links, you know. And you have to know how to delegate them and what's going to work for their strong point.
Well, I thank you, Tony, for your kind words. And I think you're absolutely right when it comes down to a lot of this, especially for, like, where I work. You know, we're not a very busy department. And, you know, we probably spend more of our time with personnel issues and things in the firehouse than we do on the fire ground. And so for some people, being in a busier department, they can get to that ability to be able to be more decisive quickly on the fire ground. And they can realize when their decision was wrong, and they can make the change to it. For me, though, the key, it doesn't matter how much experience you have. The key is do you have it in you that to admit, one, you're wrong, and that we need to change our course and go to a different route. And there are some people that have been on the job and probably seen a lot of work that are not willing to do that. And that's something comes inside the individual, but being able to recognize that quickly and acting upon it, oh man, absolutely, I agree with you 100%.
Well, he's also talking about the ability to define a beverage that arrives at your table that you know is not going to do well in you, and deviate into a different beverage.
That's good stuff.
Appreciate
you, gentlemen.
Kind of
have
words,
a good
Tony.
Evening.
All right, brother. Love you.
Love you. It's good hearing you too. All right. I love both of you. Miss you. All right.
All right, brother. We'll talk.
Hey,
we'll see you in St. Louis. All right.
Yes, sir. I'll be there.
I love that.
Right. Tap Travis in the back of the head for him.
I will. He's sitting right here. All right. Take care,
see
brother.
See you, brother.
All right. Well. Back to courage.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Rob.
No, I was just going to say, well, we'll start wrapping things up and get through our courage and whatever we have left.
Okay, well, when the Marine Corps listed the traits in courage, they're talking specifically about being bold and standing up for what is right and taking the blame when you make a mistake. And that's moral courage. And then physical courage is being able to function when there is physical danger present. And it's not too often you see that the failure of that trait in fire officers, because I mean we've all known people that are that way perhaps, and there's nothing more distasteful in your mouth when you see it. But really, where we see it more often in the fire service is when you're defending your people, when you're standing up for what's right, when you're defending the public, because our service needs to be what the public needs versus what they want or what the fire service wants. It's having integrity and being willing to use that integrity for what it's meant for. Those are scary moments, because it might not be a discussion of whether you're going to get a fire department funeral. It might be whether you get to make it to retirement because you have to find a job selling pencils because your courage resulted in you losing your job.
Yeah.
But the essence of a leader revolves around those things, the integrity and courage. Without those two foundational blocks, leaders miss the mark. Because if you choose to lead, leadership is not for those lacking courage. And unfortunately, most of the time in the modern fire service, your courage shows in the firehouse, not so much on the fire ground.
Yeah, I think it gets wrapped up to, heroic courage. It's like, do they have the courage to do, to search the floor above the fire? Where really, I mean, it means so much more than just having the ability to go and do that, or having, the willingness to go and do that, as much as it is everything else that we're doing in the firehouse.
Right, and I don't mean to downplay physical courage. There are moments where, we take a little gut check, and you do it. You do what you have to do, and that comes about probably more as you get older and you begin to sense your own fallibility, your own weaknesses. You may be aware of your condition a little more so than you were as a younger man. Billy Goldfeder said one time, you can tell a young firefighter, be careful, son, you may get killed, and he will not listen to you. And you can tell a young firefighter who's just had a child, just gotten married and had a child, be careful, son, who will take care of your wife and child? Or to the young girl, who's gonna be there with your husband and your child? And that will get their attention.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I kind of crashed through the fire service for a lot of years, even through my first two children. But when the twins were born, holy cow, I came to a rapid awareness of every dangerous action that took place. Because I really wanted to get home at the end of the shift. And that really has affected my perspective on a lot of things. At the same time, we have a job to do, and I truly believe that our job calls for a lot of risk at the appropriate time. And that's where the courage comes into play. Far more often, it's in the firehouse, having integrity, using good judgment, and standing by your convictions. It's important that we, in our daily life, we practice that and force ourselves to do the things that we are convicted about, forcing ourselves to control our reactions, and think through what we're doing. Because that's... courage is not... adrenaline, and you mentioned having the guts to search the floor above the fire. Quite often, we're moving so fast we don't do that gut check until afterwards, and we go, oh shit,
that was stupid, or that was I was taking some extra risk there. Yeah,
Yeah, and really, that's not courage. The Marine Corps especially does not define that as courage. That's, you know, the guy that that charged the machine gun nest that you always hear about in the movies or in the, you know, in the books. That's not necessarily courage. That is an emotional reaction, and the person may or may not be aware of what they're doing. Courage is when they are aware. They are maybe hyper-aware that this action will cause them physical harm, and yet they do it anyway because it is the right thing to do, and they're taking initiative, and they're applying the judgment that says this is what needs to be done in order for the team or for the mission, the goal to be accomplished. That's courage. So, as in everything else, personally, I respect the lack of bravado. I respect the lack of showiness. I respect the actions. And I think the public does too. Nothing I admire more than a humble firefighter. And, you know, we were walking into, down in Orlando, we were walking into the night out with, I was next to Hankins. We're all wearing our fire helmets, and I'm sure you were there, and the bagpipes were playing, and me and Tony were walking together. And I'll never forget how the crowd in the restaurant stood up and cheered us as we came in, and how quickly everybody wanted to hide their fire helmets. And I just really admired that about the fools.
Yeah.
But those are men and women with courage versus a lot of loud, noisy drunks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, and I think of, and, you know, of the courage, it's like there's always a time and a place. And the great fireman is the one that can select that and can determine when to apply that, you know, that level of action, knowing that what it's going to take to do it and when not to do it. And
right.
Be it on the fire ground, on a fire activity, or being, you know, in the firehouse dealing with a personnel issue. Having the courage to address maybe a firefighter that's having personal problems, drinking, for instance. There's a time and a place to cover that. And
yes.
Knowing when to do that, that separates the true leaders, the great firemen from, you know, just firemen.
Absolutely. And I don't know if we have time, but you know, we didn't cover all the traits, but I would like to wrap it up with saying that a leader needs to have endurance. And I define that as fortitude. It's one of my favorite words from what I learned from the Marine Corps. Is fortitude is about long suffering under duress. Your fortitude is used to describe what the Marine Corps veterans went through in some of the most horrific battles. And whether you're leading your firefighters into a difficult situation or just an unpleasant time in your fire department or on your company, that endurance level of the officer or the leader, if we're just talking about firefighters, that endurance is critical for your leadership, because the person that cannot hang in there for the long haul and maintain their enthusiasm, their bearing, their good judgment, their integrity, their courage, it's all wrapped up by endurance. If you cannot maintain those things, then your leadership will falter, and it's endurance that gets you there. You can't have the others without the endurance to get through those times.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're trying to develop your physical endurance, you do that by training. you do that by strengthening your body and working out, going on runs, cardio, the things that it takes to develop endurance in your body. It's the same thing mentally. And one of the biggest factors is making sure that you're prepared to do your job. You get a good night's sleep. You know, some of the things you and I were talking about last night, sorting out the priorities in your life so that you can give the department, give your job the attention that it needs. There's so many people that they're showing up to work. They're getting their paycheck. They're in uniform, but they're mentally, they're not there. Their endurance is worn out, and they're sidetracked. There's officers who are good leaders who just can no longer keep up the long haul because of the way they've been treated or the conditions of employment. Or some guys are not physically fit, and they're not able to keep up with their crew and fulfill their role as the leader, and it falls to the person below them because they're just not there. And those are pivotal things in leadership. So all these traits are important, every single one of them. Some of them are foundational, and we've highlighted a few of those. And I can't stress enough, in my opinion, how these traits need to be mentally addressed by each and every leader, regardless of the rank. Coupled with the principles, you apply them to your daily life, on and off duty, and you will begin to see a change in yourself, and others will see it too. Without them, I know lots of guys that know a lot about leadership, but that doesn't mean they know how to apply it on with boots on the ground. So I guess I'll leave it to you, Rob, to wrap this up. That's about all I've got to say at the moment.
Well, you know, the one thing in wrapping everything up, and I, first of all, Ben, I love having conversations with you. I mean, we talked for an hour and a half last night. We're spending 2 hours plus today, and I always enjoy our conversations, and I'm always learning something. But the one thing that I think that as we've gone over these principles and these traits, the one thing that I hope that our firefighters out there, company officer, firefighter, driver, hopefully what you pull from this is that get into the books, pick a book up, and you can learn a lot from the people that you're working with, and picking up shows like this and listening, but got to pick up a book, and you got to really get involved and learn it, read it, review it, go back through it. John Salka's book, First In, Last Out. I mean, you can use that book. You can pull a lot of different principles and what would be good for a firefighter, if we're being specific to the fire service. I have a book called The 30 Management Principles of the United States Marine Corps, and it's about core business. Another good one. And another leadership book that I have is Leadership on the Line. And getting into these books and reading these things, you're going to be able to pick up a lot of what Ben's talking about in the traits of leadership, the principles of leadership, because it's in these books. This stuff is nothing new. It's been around for a long time.
And absolutely, Rob. There's an excellent book that I based a lot of my the way I've formulated this particular lecture that we're going over. A lot of my motivation for that comes from General Wesley Fox. He was Medal of Honor winner in the Vietnam War. He served in the Korean War, started out as a rifleman, ended his career as a senior officer, and he writes a book called The Six Elements of Leadership. And he goes through the traits and the principles, but he really delves into the intangible things that make leadership what it is. and that's the substance of his book. It's the kind of book a young firefighter would enjoy reading, because he's talking about combat and also about life outside of combat in the Marine Corps. He explains some of the troubles the Marine Corps has had, and there's some interesting parallels between that and the fire service and the struggles that we go through in with our leaders and with inexperienced leaders and filling gaps in the line with people that aren't prepared to do the job yet, but they're the only people we've got. And there are some correlations that a smart, attentive person can take out of there and apply to their own daily lives on the job. There's a lot of good books being written right now because of the war that we've just come out of. Leadership in Dangerous Situations and is one of them. And we really need to get a list ready the next time we do this and have a bunch of them.
Well, maybe one thing we can work on is we can put together a list. And, you know, Travis Rask, one of our firefighters, he always has a reading list and he shares it every year. And maybe we can get a group of guys to put together the list of kind of like required reading. I know Marine Corps has stuff like that where they, you know, this is required reading for their leadership candidates or their candidates for officer. And maybe we should put that out and put it on our international site where guys can connect in and pull that stuff down.
I think it's a great idea. And one of the things that I see in the young firefighters of today, both in teaching college fire science and just around the firehouse, is they have a tough time reading books because they're not geared that way anymore. Society has changed. And even guys in our own peer group struggle with that. But when you look at the leaders throughout history that really made a mark, many, many of them were extremely well read. And some of them, for no other reason than it was a way to teach themselves discipline. It takes discipline to sit and read a book and not just read it, but to extract information out of it and apply it to your life. So I think it is absolutely a mandatory reading list for the would-be leader amongst us.
Well, we'll work on that. I'll communicate with you and with others. And as we were just talking about this, I just got a text from a brother that just said, "Hey, you know, I just ordered 5-Alarm Leadership and Step Up and Lead just a few days ago, and it's re-energizing him." So, but we'll work on books. On a list. We'll put it on the International's website. And, so we'll wrap this thing up. Ben, it's been great doing this over the last two shows. I think when we're said and done here with the first show, which was I think it was show 449. You can pick it up on iTunes or go in the archives. That was 3 hours long. This one's coming out close to 3 hours long as well. So, 6-hour talk on leadership. I do appreciate your time, Ben, and always respect your opinion on things, and always love talking with you.
You know, I feel the same way about you, Rob. Especially, like the talk we had last night. What a helpful thing that was to me and where I'm at right now. And I hold you in the highest esteem, and I'm not saying that so that everybody can enjoy us batting on each other on the back. I'm saying it because I really view you as a incredibly mature and experienced leader. And you said to me one time, I made the faux pas, the mistake of referring to you as a great fireman, and you go, "You don't know that I'm a great fireman." Because, Ben, all you know is that I'm a brother and that we're friends. And I've got a lot of enthusiasm for the fools. And, I thought about that. You really made me think about that. And that was very true. But since then, I have come to know you well. And you are a quality leader, my friend. And I have really been honored to do this with you, and I've enjoyed taking the walk.
It's been a great walk, and I appreciate the kind words, and I am not as eloquent with words as you are, and I will just tell you, I love you. You're a great brother. I always learn something from you. I highly respect you, and I hope one day we can do work together.
That would be awesome, wouldn't it?
It sure would. All right, brother. Well, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to close things up here if you want to hang in. And while I finish this up, it would be great. If not, I'll be in touch. And I'm going to be leaving with my wife. We're very proud of our son who's graduating from college on Sunday. And we're heading to Vegas. He's graduating from UNLV in casino gaming. So I'm going to wrap
Rebels.
This up. Yeah, the Running Rebels. The Running Rebels. So I will have to touch bases with you when I come back from Vegas. I did leave one thing out when we were talking. I just want to bring up while we were at FDIC, I got to sit down with Drew Geiser from Distant Sellers and Brian Brush. Both of them work for West Metro Fire in Colorado, and Distant Sellers worked on creating a wine. They're a winery, and they have the 2010 Tribute Red Blend. And this wine is really good. I got a chance to sit down and drink with them. And if anybody that knows me knows that I love wine, we got to sit down and drink this wine. But the cool thing is, Drew and his family's winery, Distant Cellars, are going to be giving 30% of the proceeds back to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, and was working with Brian Brush on it, and it's a great cause. $28 a bottle, $336 for a case. If you go to their website, distantcellars.com, in the top right you'll see a link which is that's NFFF on there, and click on that and you can go there and order your wine. Their wines are great. I enjoyed it, and it's a great cause. So with that being said, I'm going to close things up. Everybody, it's been great hanging out with you this evening. I'm going to go and grab some wine and cook dinner for my wife as we relax and get ready to go to Vegas. So unless you have anything else there, Ben, I am going to wrap the show up.
All right, brother. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, man. Take care.
Take care.
Running a facility, chances are managing inventory isn't your favorite part of the day. Stocking and tracking, ordering and organizing, all necessary evils eating up your time. That's why Grainger's KeepStock services help you manage your inventory more efficiently, from basic labeling and scanning to secure dispensing machines, putting you in total control, often allowing you to buy less, making things seem, well, not so evil anymore. Contact your Grainger representative or visit Grainger.com/KeepStock today. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.